Welcome to What in God's Name. She is Shayna Appel.
And he's Chris Owen.
We are
reframing and reclaiming our shared public narrative.
Yeah. Public conversations. Getting beyond political and economic ways of framing conversations, because those categories of public life, politics and economics, they dominate so much of our conversations, and their conceptual map of what it means to be human. We are not just political, we are not just economic, and if we understand human beings just in that way, we are missing something deep and important.
I think it's also important to point out, Chris, that part of it is the framing of the political and the economic that makes it so limiting. Those are conversations that could be rich, but they are tightly bound within this framework. Economics is all about profit and loss, you know, and politics is about who's in and who's out. And so nowhere in either of those conversations do we get to lift up, you know, what is in the interest of the common good. How can we be a stand for each other? How can we nurture and encourage the best in humanity? That conversation could be present in conversations about economics and politics, just not these days.
You know what? We need to find an economist who thinks at this level, this more reflective philosophical level, because I know they exist. They're out there
somewhere.
And yes. So that I'm just imagining that conversation with that economist.
Sure.
Kind of setting us straight a little bit, or at least raising, not setting us straight because we're right, but
adding a little layer. Looking at too how economics are done in other countries, you know, where it is much more humane. Yeah, I think it's good to look outside our own box every once in a while.
So we want to bring broadly moral and broadly theological reflection to public conversations, and that is indeed what we're doing and what we are inviting you, our listening community, to do with us. In the continuing creative development of our project, we are doing talkbacks because we want to hear from you. We want you to engage in conversation. Our next talkback, you can pencil this in. Pencil it in. It's not totally set yet. Tuesday, October 25th at 7 p.m. Our talkback guest is Alicia Keys Harris. We will be releasing our conversation with her shortly, in which she responds to the question of what are we grieving in our shared common life. Alicia Keys Harris is an educational specialist at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. She has a fascinating life story, and she has really beautiful and interesting observations about our shared common life. So, talk back Tuesday, October 25th at 7 p.m. Pencil that in. And I also want to say, Shayna, that as we express our project in different ways, we have a speaking engagement coming up on November 2nd with the New Hampshire Council of Churches.
Yes, we do.
That will be at noon, so you can grab your lunch and spend time with us. More details about that will be coming out later. And I am invited to speak to a local Rotary Club about the What in God's Name project. I giggle about that a little bit. But hey, let's go talk to the Rotary. Why not? We need your help. Support us on Patreon. Your money goes to something good, and that is fostering these kinds of conversations. That's what we do. We foster them. We have them. We invite them. We curate good, healthy conversations about our shared common life, because God knows we need healthy conversations and deeper conversations about our shared common life. Find us on patreon.com in the search bar. What in God's Name? You can help sustain this project and enlarge this project for as little as a dollar a week. Everybody's got a Patreon page, but you should support us. We're doing really good work that's important, and you can join us. We have a spinny wheel. The spinny wheel has 16 core values and key ideas. We spin it. The spinner lands on one of those core values and key ideas. And we do a riff as a way to warm up and as a way to say more about who we are. Okay. Randomness and playfulness is where the pointer has stopped. Randomness and playfulness. A key idea in the What in God's Name vibe. Randomness and playfulness is anti-ideological. So randomness and playfulness, tyrants don't like that. Tyranny is not a fan of randomness and playfulness, because randomness and playfulness point to the open-ended and mysterious nature of reality, of where we live, and open up possibility. Hope lives in randomness and playfulness. Creativity lives in at the address of playfulness and randomness.
Yeah, I was just thinking it's just much more fun to have a conversation with somebody who's in a space of randomness and playfulness than it is sitting down with a know-it-all, right? I mean, we've all had those conversations. So that was about as deep as my mind was able to go with that this morning.
Of course it's more fun, because it's
realm that we talk about, the holy curiosity.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, where you're...
Absolutely.
You know, sit down and have a conversation with a 3-year-old or a 4-year-old if you haven't done that in a while. It can be pretty philosophical.
Our theme this fall is, what are you grieving in our shared common life? A theme of grief, a theme of loss, not to end there, but rather to use that as a way to propel conversations about values and what do we hold to be important and dear, because the things that you grieve are the things that you hold to be important, the things that you hold to be valuable. Last week, Shana and I shared, each of us shared what we are grieving about our shared common life. And Shana said, in a word, connection. And I said, in a word, hopefulness. And so those are the embedded values that we identify when we get in touch with our sense of loss, of what we're missing out in our shared common life. At the end of our conversation last week, I said something like, we need to be asserting these good things that we identify by being in touch with our grief. We need to assert these values into the world. And in fact, one of the things that's missing, maybe this is another thing I grieve, is being able to articulate and assert these good things that we miss, that we desire, asserting them, making them public, putting them out there, and saying, this is good, this is worthy of our work and worthy of our time and attention. And you said, you picked up on that and said, part of the difficulty is, and you identified this with the progressive left, you said, the reticence, use the word reticence, of the political left to articulate values. It's understandable that that happens because of how the religious right and the radical right have rolled up morality as a club and used it against people. And that was the end of the show, because we were towards the end and I wanted to respond to that and I didn't have a chance. So now's the chance. And so this is what I want to say, and I don't disagree with that. I mean, we can look at all kinds of times in history in the United States, or even contemporary life in other places that are theocratic, where there are morality police who are policing morality. That's what morality police do. And they do use this kind of purity sense of morality as a weapon. And I think, so I don't disagree with that. What I did want to respond to, though, is I think there's more. I think another reason that the left hesitates or is not vocal about articulating value into the public square is that the left is more prone to moral relativism.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking that. Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, okay, the show's over.
Thanks
for spending another morning with.
I thought I was expecting a little pushback, but
none
but,
whatsoever.
But I'm actually not surprised because.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think the in the interest of remaining open and creating room at the table, we allow for so many truths to be a truth, right? Okay, well, that's your truth. And in that process, and I've been worried about this for some time, in somewhere down that road of, you know, opening the table to all, I think we lost our footing a bit. I think we lost our grip on, their values. I mean, I know, I believe that, in fact, many of the people who got sucked up into the whole January 6th brouhaha at the Capitol, many of the people who got, you know, sucked into Donald Trump's realm and world and this whole idea that the election was stolen, et cetera, et cetera. I believe many of those people believed they were doing the right thing. They believed their president had called them and said democracy is under attack and the election has been stolen and we need to take back the government. I think I can imagine a scenario in which my side would be likewise, you know, enlisted to step up and to say, no, we cannot allow this to happen. I don't think it would. I hope it wouldn't turn into the violent mosh pit we saw on January 6th. But I can imagine folks getting sucked into something. So it is, in fact, I can acknowledge that that was their truth, right? While still standing firm and saying, but it is not the truth. And that there are some absolutes. I mean, few. And yeah, they're going to change over time. But it is a fact that the election was not stolen. It is a fact that Joe Biden is rightfully the president of the United States. It is a fact that people with different skin tones are equal under God and embraced all as children of God. It is a fact that people are worthy of respect and dignity. It is a fact that no one should have to go hungry. No one should have to worry about where they're putting their head down. I mean, these are, okay, those are things we can bind ourselves to and say with certainty, I believe that is a value, that is a truth that I'm willing to stick to. And it's not all relative. You know, it's not all relative. You can't just look at it and say, well, you know, you think everybody should have food to eat. You know, that's your truth. No, I believe that's a truth. And I'll stake a claim for that value.
Thank you for that. And so here's the next place my thinking goes, because I think we're in a label, L-A-B-I-L-E, like we're in a moment where things are unstable. I think a label.
Labile.
Thank you. Moment is, that's the definition of it. Coalitions are coming apart and new coalitions are being formed. I feel like we're in that kind of a moment. And so I'll just test this out with you and our listening community, because I don't think I've said this to anybody yet. It feels like there are possibilities right now for new kinds of coalitions in public conversations. So I'm not even talking about political parties, although it might have ramifications there. And one new kind of coalition, people finding each other that might not have found each other, say, 3 years ago, is people who believe that, as you've articulated, that there is such a thing as the good, that it's not all relative, that doubling down and just repeating falsehood does not make for truth. So
as we have learned the hard way,
but what I'm feeling is that there, you know, there are people who might, I'll put it pretty starkly just so people can see. I'm wondering if there are people who disagree about, let's say, abortion, that have, they disagree about it, but they have more in common than somebody they might agree with on the issue of abortion because they disagree on moral grounds. And the people they agree with don't think morality has anything to do with it.
Oh, wow, that's okay. That opens a window to a whole third plane. Let's unpack that a little bit because I think I've got it. I'm trying to wrap my head around it. I'm wondering if our listeners are going to kind of go, whoa, Christopher, where'd you go, buddy? But it's an interesting... So you're suggesting like a possibility or inviting us to imagine that there are people who think morally and those for whom the morality either doesn't play in at all or is just not something that they're consciously playing with at any given time. And in that realm, in that world where there are people who think morally and people who don't, that moral people who disagree on an issue would have more in common by virtue of the fact that they identify morality as a grounding precept. Did I get that?
You did so well. It's very gratifying to me to hear you say that because it gives me hope that I actually said what I meant to say.
So I want to play with that a little bit because I got to get my head around it. I can totally agree with that and totally not. But I'm more likely going to agree with it. For me, the conversation with somebody who at least is wrestling with morality, if I don't agree with them, I can still respect where they're coming from. Whereas somebody who's just not thinking about something at all, but rather parroting, let's say, you know, what they've heard on Fox News the night before or, you know, whatever combustible BS just came out of Donald Trump's mouth, you know, that to me is garbage. And you're not thinking, I mean, in fact, now that I'm thinking my way into what you're saying, that is a source of my disrespect for some people and a place where I have to really struggle because, as a Unitarian Universalist, we covenant to affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of all people. And there are people who definitely make that a challenge. And I think you're right. I think I can disagree with someone on a moral premise easier than I can somebody who's just not processing, who's not thinking, or who can't, is not even trying to think their way through or make sense of something. Where was it? So I just saw an interview the other day with the new president of the Southern Baptist Convention. And it was one, and I'm sorry, I don't remember his name. And it was one of those situations where, I mean, I could absolutely just disagree, you know, I mean, especially when it comes down to LGBTQ, you know, you can't be Baptist and be gay. Well, guess what, pal? There are a lot of Baptists who are gay. So God apparently disagrees with your ass. But we can disagree on that, but I can still hold him in high accord for many of the other stands that he's taking. We may disagree on the stands, but ultimately, at the end of the day, it is easier for me to respect him as a person because he has a set of moral grounding stones, if you will, cornerstones that, you know, he's bound himself to, and that's what he's going through this world, you know, wrestling with and working out in relationship to. And that, I don't know, that just, I respect, even if I don't agree.
Yeah. And I loved what you just said about characterizing the wrestling with and in relationship to, because, I mean, so I'll take a step back from what I said and say, it's not just having a moral grounding or outlook, but it's the way you engage with moral questions. So if you come as a theocrat and just say, fiat, this is good, then I'm not going to have a lot of common with you, because the approach doesn't allow for randomness and playfulness.
Right.
The approach is ideological.
Right.
It's I have my preconceived ideas about X, Y, and Z that I'm going to bring in and impose. And that's a way different kind. From the content of the morality, there's a morality to how we process what's moral and good in terms of conversation. And so you identify this kind of, the phrases you used, process and relationship. And I think that's a key piece of it as well.
And as is usual, Chris, you've gone way deeper in this than I did, which is part of the fun of being your conversation partner. Because I just realized that something that I have been struggling with of late is I am really so sick and tired of people's opinions. I am just so tired of people's opinions. You know, like, I don't care what your opinion is. I really don't. Tell me what it's grounded in. Tell me about the deepest things that we know right away and come back to this thing, and I may have a different view of it, but it just feels like one of the unhealthier aspects of our culture right now, culture being patterns of thought and habits of behavior adopted by a group of people. So one of the downsides of our culture right now is the value we put on opinion without asking it to have any moral, theological, psychological, you know, give me a reason. Like, tell me why. Because otherwise it's just your opinion. And frankly, you know, they're a dime a dozen and everybody has two or three. So we stay up here. The conversation and opinion stays up in a burble. It's like so much flotsam and jetsam that's just being influenced by, you know, the fad of the moment, without ever taking that time to get down deep, which is where religion, faith, philosophical practices can take, you know, do take us when we engage in them. They get us down below that surface stuff and creates the infrastructure of our interdependence. Up here in the burble, there's no real possibility. There's just your opinion and my opinion. And like I said, so much flotsam and jetsam banging into each other out there on the ocean, and depending on which way the wind's blowing and the tide's moving. And but it's a fascinating, and I think I would definitely put that on the list of things I'm grieving, that, you know, it gives depth to my understanding of what I mean when I say I feel like we've lost connection. That it's really hard
to have the kind of conversation that goes beyond asserting your opinion.
Yeah.
Requires vulnerability, because my mind might change. And so, but that kind of vulnerability is the place where connection happens.
Yeah.
Like if you have deep and meaningful conversations where you are willing to risk your cherished opinion about something, which, you know, the possibility opens that we deepen our connections one with another.
But even if we don't change our opinion, by virtue of the fact that I have invited you in, my inner landscape will be forever changed, because it will now contain your opinion, even if I don't agree with it. But I have welcomed it in. I have allowed it to become part of my thinking landscape. And I now, it may have even bolstered, you know, my position on an issue, but my position is bolstered with an understanding of how other people think about this. So I can no longer exist in the world as if my way is the only way. And I hate that because it's much easier when my way is the only way. Much easier when people agree with me, damn it.
This is the heart of our project, I think, Shana, is just we've identified the heart of conversation, deep listening, conversation, vulnerability, openness to hearing other people's perspectives. Not just about, well, it does involve us as individuals and our held commitments, but it goes beyond that. It's not, you know, it's a way of self, conversation is a way of self-transcendence.
Mm.
It gets if we're really deeply listening and willing to learn, be curious, our core value.
Go
like
deep.
If we exactly if we're able to do that, then the public change. We change, but that changes the public space.
So, can I ask a question? I'm going to ask you a question. I can ask a question. I'm the other co-host of the show, Chris. Let me ask you a question. I'm curious. How do you think an emotional load impacts the based on what we're saying. So we're talking about those conversations which arise out of a wrestling with some moral, theological, ethical context. And sometimes we get down to those sort of core issues for ourselves. There's an emotional load on it. And how does that impact our ability to hear one another? Because I feel so, it feels to me, my inclination is to say, it depends on, I can absolutely handle hearing a conversation that is emotionally charged. If the person who is emotionally charged is able to take responsibility for the emotional charge. And where I have an issue or where I tend to kind of want to say, hang on a second, is if I'm in a conversation with somebody who's sort of, you know, splattering their emotional charge all over me. And like in some way, shape or form, it is my responsibility to manage their, you know, emotional content, which if I had a magic freaking wand, I would, but I don't have that magic freaking wand. And the bottom line is, while this may be an emotional issue for you, it is not for these other eight people over here. The anger, like anger and hostility, which has dominated so much of the conversation in our public square, I think makes it really hard. I think it makes it really hard to hear, or even harder to hear if you don't know the context. So somebody hasn't said, look, this is a really emotional issue for me. You know, we want to go back to the issue of abortion. You know, I'd love to have this conversation with you as if it hadn't impacted me personally, but it has, and this is how. And so, you know, if this conversation carries some emotional charge, please know that I know that's mine. Okay, now we're going to enter the conversation, and you know, I don't feel like I have to defend myself in some way, shape, or form against that emotion. But does, and I don't want to believe that the emotional or the ethical, particularly, you know, we talk about multicultural, multi-ethnic awareness and competencies. Obviously, in different cultures, emotion in conversation takes a very different, right? Has a very different place, is held very differently. And so how do we manage all that? I realize I probably just threw like 24 questions at you, but that issue, emotionality, emotional content.
I'm going to suggest that we pick that up as our next show, because I think you've landed on something pretty crucial, which is the role of our emotions in conversation. And it's so rampant. You've identified it really in our public conversations now and in our culture. There's a lot of emotionality that drives and derails, but can be It's interesting. I just thought of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King's letter from Birmingham Jail, which I feel like is one of the most amazing
seminal pieces
of writing in American history.
Yeah.
And what is so powerful about it is the emotional intensity of it, but focused. Like he was in full command.
He was. The emotion didn't eclipse
the
moral.
It drove the power of his words.
Absolutely.
And so it's interesting. It gives me chills just to think about it.
You know, I'm probably thinking about this because of the interview that we did with Alyssa. We were talking about spirit, which our listeners will have heard or will hear.
Someday.
Somewhere in really. We're speaking to Alyssa Rossoff, who's a humanist chaplain, and we're talking about spiritual practices to keep you stable in a job environment that can be very challenging. She's a prison chaplain. And, and I was surprised, as she said, allowing myself to be angry, you know, is one of the ways I keep myself spiritually, that I keep the spiritual keel, you know, in the water. And I thought that was fascinating because as women, we are so inculcated not, you know, to do that. So yeah, there's a lot here. And I think the conversation would certainly be deepened by a multicultural, multi-ethnic viewpoint on it. So yeah, let's pick that one up.
Be curious, Shana.
Go deep, Christopher.
And shine light. To you, our listening community, we are so grateful for you and for you to be with us, and we invite you to join us in conversation. Send us an email to the mailbag if you like. We always love to hear from you in our mailbag. Join us in our talk back. It's a new piece that we're introducing because we want to expand the conversation. That will be penciled in on Tuesday, October 25th for our next talk back. This show is brought to you by our donors on Patreon, patreon.com. And of course, you can sign up for our newsletter at whatingods.com, our website, which is Shana,
WHATINGODS.
Great to be with you. Thank you for a wonderful conversation today.
Thank you, Christopher.